Hello, product innovators. Today we learn how to use crowdfunding to collect key customer feedback from a leader who has built 15 companies over 15 years.
This is the Product Startup Podcast, a show to learn from top leaders in hardware product development, prototyping, manufacturing, product selling, and everything in between. Hosted by Kevin Macko, the leading expert on product development for hardware startups.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm very excited to introduce Yuri Voinos to the show. Yuri is the founder of 15 companies that have done tens of millions of dollars in revenue. One of them is the Jammy Portable Guitar, which did $250,000 in funding on its first crowdfunding campaign, then $500,000 on the second. Today, Yuri will share valuable knowledge for inventors, startups, and small manufacturers on the value of customer feedback on a crowdfunding campaign, how to use that feedback to do a great second version of your product, and other crowdfunding tips for success for your hardware product. Now, on to the episode.
This show is produced by Macko Design, the original firm providing end-to-end consumer product development services tailored specifically to hardware startups, small manufacturers, and inventors. Take your product from idea to store shelves at MackoDesign.com. Now, on to the episode.
Hey, Yuri, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're really excited today to have you on to talk about your experience in scaling through crowdfunding. You did multiple crowdfunding campaigns with the Jammy product, which is really cool, but you've also been a part of venture funding, millions of dollars in funding, tens of millions of dollars in revenue across your organizations in some years and whatnot. So what better person that knows all of these different startups, both from a venture perspective, but also from a founder perspective, a manager perspective? You've essentially done it all. And really drilling down onto why you took the crowdfunding approach with Jammy, and then why you chose to scale up doing then multiple crowdfundings with newer, better variants of the product as you learned from versions before. So before we get into that whole story, just give us a bit of a background on how you became the big success story that you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I launched my first startup in 2009, right after I graduated from National Technical University. And this was a cybersecurity consumer offering, which is now called Clario. And ironically, it was one of the most successful things I've done. It is the company that hit eight figures in annual revenue. And at some point of time, we got 50 million downloads of our security software. And we wanted to explore other businesses and other verticals. So we had almost like a corporate venture arm where we would fund talented teams or high potential individuals and back some of the ideas. Some of those were our ideas. And this is how Jammy Guitar was born. So this was one of those projects. Up until now, I've launched 15 different products. This is probably one of the most emotional products I've ever done, because hardware is just a different beast. You can touch it, you can carry it with you. It's just so different from software.
Looking forward to talking about Jammy. Just give us a bit of a high level. What is Jammy? And then let's talk about what you did from the crowdfunding angle.
Yeah. So when we started working on Jammy, what we wanted to do was the most portable electronic guitar. So imagine you want to take your guitar with you on a hiking trip, or you just want to jam in a meeting room and you really want to, just put your headphones on and then jam a little bit, or maybe record some of the tunes that you have on your mind. Products that were available on the market at that time were really not doing a good job, in my opinion, and we wanted to fill that gap. This is one of those ideas where you pitch it and you're like, yeah, you can disassemble the guitar, you can put it in your backpack. And everyone was like, really? Like, I want that. Like, that's a really appealing idea. So we almost immediately got this feedback. People were saying, like, do the crowdfunding. I'm going to back you guys, which we did. And one of the things that, we strategized and we wanted to understand, like, what exactly do we want to build? What's going to be the industrial design, the unit economics, all of those things. We wanted to do a prototype. But at some point of time, when we were know what we were building exactly, and we had a really good idea, okay, so that's exactly, it's going to work. We know we're going to make it work. Then it's almost like you want to achieve the market fit. And the other part of this, the reason it's called product market fit, I think it's not just about your product. It's also about what market will say, how users will react to what you're doing. Of course, we wanted to raise funds. And we did. Our first Indiegogo campaign raised $250,000 for us, which was twice as more as we wanted to raise. So we think we've exceeded the goal and this was great, but it's really not the number that will fund the entire venture. The reason we wanted to do the Indiegogo campaign is actually less of the revenue aspect of that, which is, I think, is counterintuitive for a lot of people that I talk who are, you know, exploring the hardware ventures. And the biggest value out of that, of the Indiegogo campaign, was the feedback from backers and, you know, the community that we created around them, because we had a vehicle to communicate them, provide feedback, and also what will resonate and what sort of aspects of the product does resonate, what are their wishes for or requests for product fine-tuning. So you get this immediate high-quality product feedback from people who are backing you with real money. And that's probably was the most beautiful part of this campaign.
That's so powerful and such a big part of crowdfunding. We've talked about it a bunch on the show, and we've done a lot of stuff on tricks and tips around actually building the crowdfunding campaign. But what I wanted to talk to you today was about more of that feedback loop, because you were one who really took that to heart, focused on feedback as your number one priority, as you mentioned. And as a result of that, you got this incredible feedback from people who had actually pulled out their credit card and pre-purchased your product. So you get to know what they like about your offering, what they don't like about the offering. And then, of course, you've already got these customers lined up. So it's an amazing double-edged sword where you're getting this great feedback. And at the same time, then you've also got those sales ready to go. What you then did is leverage that to another campaign through that feedback. So, from my notes here, I'm just looking at your campaign. You had almost 700 backers just on your first campaign, $358,000 US in funding. What happened after that?
Well, let me just say that what happens right after you close the crowdfunding campaign with that results, you celebrate. You absolutely celebrate because it's an absolute win. You want to acknowledge the mom that you've done something right, for sure. But then what happens next is a lot of hard work, and it's your next chapter. In our case, we delivered the prototype, and part of this was working really hard to fine-tune things, to make sure that everything will work well as we start shipping the product. But the other part, which we were doing in parallel, was also evangelizing the product a lot. We were participating in the NAMM show in Nashville, and we got a best of show award.
Nice.
Which was, it was very, very nice. This was in 2018. So next year after we did the first Indiegogo campaign, that got us a lot of traction and a lot of interest and feedback from folks who were into the music industry. And I guess even before we really start like selling the product, we realized that there was a clear signal of what audience, of what segment of our customers like really want to get the product, like the most excited. So it seemed to us that the biggest fit was with music professionals. This is a relatively niche audience. So it's a smaller audience from a segmentation perspective, but they got it immediately. They wanted it. They were okay with the price. At the time, we were selling like $4,500 MSRP, which is a pretty high price for a music gadget. And we managed to get a lot of feedback. And at the time, I remember that I really like two DJs. I think they are Italian, Asa and Jolie. And I follow them on Insta. And one of those days I wake up, I watch their story, and they're jamming with our product. Like I literally fall out of the bed. I was like,
amazing.
No way. It's just up until now, I remember this moment and it gives me such a big kick. Those moments. And then of course there were our other musicians who tried our product and they gave us this feedback. So this is, I think, was the biggest learning out of all those things within the 2 years, that we really wanted to nail the professional segment. And in order to do that, we felt that we need to launch the second generation of the product. So not only this was a portable guitar, but this was a fully functional MIDI instrument. So you could have played using strings techniques. You could have played woodwind. You could have played whatever you wanted to, just like with a synthesizer. And we've done a lot to focus on those, on that group. And this is why we launched the second crowdfunding campaign, which actually was launched on both Indiegogo and Kickstarter. That was another learning. The audiences are different. When we were launching the first crowdfunding campaign, we had such a heated debate. It's like, no, we have to go Indiegogo. We know there are some guys are saying the results are better. Another was like, no, we have to do Kickstarter. It's more credible. Like, do both. What we've learned, the audience, they don't overlap. We've managed to collect almost $500,000 from both platforms by running them at relatively same time.
There's a couple big things there that I love that you mentioned in your story here. One of them was that you identified in the early days before you ran the campaign a potential customer segment. You said, hey, this would be great if we could have a super portable guitar. People would love this, throw in their backpack, whatever. But what you did with the crowdfunding campaign is you really isolated your best customers, especially for the type of product, A, that you had then, but that also you maybe had vision to grow into at a later stage. And that's the second thing that I thought was so profound about what you're talking about, and something that a lot of hardware startups struggle with, is not having too many features or not doing feature creep on their first version. You very carefully put out a first version that didn't have the full suite that you mentioned in your second version. You listened to your customers on selling the first one, which was successful. You isolated a target market that wanted it. People bought it before it was even on the shelves. They bought it on crowdfunding, which is a real testament to the quality of the idea, the fact that they're willing to pull out their credit card before that thing is even able to be tried in a store or any other way, especially for a musical instrument. And then you use that feedback from those customers to figure out, okay, what are we really going to do to nail the market on a second round? And your second campaign was almost twice the size across Kickstarter and Indiegogo, like you said, over $500,000 raise now for the version 2.0 or the pro version. You guys called it the Jammy Evo at the time. So that's so important for a hardware startup that's just at the very early stages of product development to think, what am I going to launch with? Even if it's not the vision, what I eventually want to do down the road, know that it's always easier, especially as a limited budget hardware startup, to start with your MVP version, but of course, never sacrificing quality. Make sure you have a great quality product. Listen to your customers on your first campaign or your first sales. It doesn't even have to be crowdfunding. However you're selling it, you'd be selling it through retailers, wholesalers, partners, distribution channels, influencers, direct to customers, whatever it might be. The point is to get your first version out to market, listen to those customers, and then use that. As you said, this was more important than the money to you on your first campaign, using that feedback in order to make a great product for your version 2.0.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you hit this on the nail. I think we also, what we've also done, we understood the hardware components much better. So we were able to reduce the MSRP price. We shaved almost $100, which was easier because of course you get this feedback, like just make it cheaper, it's too expensive. And I think it's universal. Like you price is just, it's such a critical aspect to the hardware business. And this is, I think, part of the things that make it really hard. There is so much that's happening and cash flow is interesting for the hardware components. So, but my biggest learning is that definitely do the crowdfunding. You secure the revenue early. And this is probably one of the nicest things that you can do about the hardware business, because the revenue comes in almost like pre-sales, pre-orders, good validation, early feedback without necessarily hitting the shelves. And then, yeah, my only other learning that we've done after launching crowdfunding campaigns is that it was interesting how direct sales through our own online store were actually lower than Amazon sales. And I've really learned that unless you have a really good brand and unless you have a really good credibility, like people would rather order your products on Amazon. And I initially thought this was just the brand and credibility thing. And then I actually discovered that it's also for convenience, because Amazon have Prime and expedited deliveries and all of those beautiful things. You probably don't have that. So most likely people will expect you to be there. And that's, you know, something else that you need to plan and be diligent about from a cash flow perspective and a business model perspective.
Well, that's a nice thing about crowdfunding too. You can launch via crowdfunding, learn all of these great things, improve your processes, both on the product market fit, but also on the manufacturing side, so that when you're ready to launch on Amazon, you're going to do a great job. You're going to get great reviews. As we all know, Amazon reviews are so important. So make sure that you're developing a product that's great, that really is matching that customer. And what better way to learn than through your crowdfunding campaign? Something that you highlighted there too, we talk a lot about in scaling the business, and something that's important for a hardware startup to consider, is the fact that your first production run is not going to be your cheapest. It almost never is going to be your cheapest. First of all, it's just low volume. So you don't have economies of scale to have the negotiating power. But in addition to that, as you grow, not only are you getting volume, but you're also learning a lot about the design and engineering process and really fine-tuning a lot of those details. Arguably, you should almost over-engineer your product in the beginning, but again, that doesn't mean over-engineer features. Less features, but really well-engineered features. And then as you scale, you can actually figure out how to maybe reduce some of the over-engineering on, let's call it the excessive quality, maybe or maybe not, depending on how your product's going. But you could look at those things, especially with scale, spend some time with your designers, your engineers, et cetera, really drilling down on costing down. It's an exercise that does have a cost. It is expensive. It is something that's done both with design engineers and your manufacturing engineers, the manufacturer itself, the supply chain around that. So once you have that volume, you're in a much better position to negotiate, but you're also far more intelligent at the processes. And also you have the money to spend the effort on all those tiny little details that really don't make sense for a version 1.0, but may make sense when you're moving from hundreds of units to thousands and eventually onto tens of thousands of units.
Yeah, I think you got this right. The only other thing I wanted to mention about our crowdfunding campaign is that what worked best for us, and this is like a smaller tactics, I guess, is we've done both. We've done like a professional video, which was recorded in the studio. And we've also done like a semi-professional, almost like indie type of video by one of our most passionate employees, who's also like a stellar guitar player. And I think that resonated much better. The story from your own words, from your own team, showcasing the product, we really just had that person jamming in the car. And this was so powerful. And he did like a really good job. Like it was a really good music. And every single time I talk to anyone who was, you know, was seeing those campaigns, they're like, oh, I know, I remember that guy. I was like, yeah, he's actually one of us.
Yeah, that's great. You can never discount user-generated content, whether it's your staff, whether it's yourself as a founder, whether it's your customers. This stuff goes a long way, especially as you look at more advanced marketing or even just validation down the road. Maybe your primary video is a professionally shot video, but the next video is somebody using it. And maybe you're doing retargeting videos after that that are showing different people using it in different ways. There's lots of different things depending on the type of product, but especially today in 2024, people love authentic content. One of the big things that we talk about a lot on the show is being the person behind the brand. Don't be afraid to get in front of a camera. It doesn't have to be professional. Use your smartphone and just shoot a video of what you're working on the product, what you love about the product as the founder, what you're doing. And people will resonate with that because big corporate can't do this. Big corporate doesn't have the ability to, they have to outsource that to somebody who they pay. You are doing it authentically and people see that, especially end customers. So it might be the tipping point that gets them to place an order on pre-purchases via crowdfunding, as opposed to waiting to see it in the store. You know, that might be the difference, that authenticity. Whereas if they were hesitant before, they saw you, they trusted you, they loved your vision, they loved what you loved about the product, they felt that connection, and therefore they made a purchase decision. So certainly think about that authentic video, which means low cost or even free. Hayden, that's something that's always great for a hardware startup.
100%.
Yuri, much appreciated for all your words of wisdom today, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, and take care.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Product Startup Podcast. If you found some value in the show, please do us a huge favor and hit the like button and subscribe. If you have any questions, guest suggestions, or anything else, feel free to reach out to us anytime at our email, podcast@macodesign.com. This show is hosted by Kevin Macko, North America's leading expert on product development for hardware startups. And the podcast is produced by Macko Design, the original firm providing end-to-end consumer product development services tailored specifically to hardware startups, small manufacturers, and inventors. Take your product from idea to store shelves at MackoDesign.com. That's MAKO Design.com. Thanks for joining, and see you again soon.